D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Matich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Adam, I'm good. I'm good. Have you guys gotten all the insect repellent scraped off of Derek's body by now?
He's still got that smell, you know, when you put the bug spray. That's always, I hate that.
Bug spray and smoke.
Smoke, yeah.
What kind of smoke, Derek?
It's a very good question.
I plead the fifth on that one.
Anyway. So, Trevor, over the weekend, a story broke about Reuben Bain being involved in a fatal car accident about 2 years ago. We've seen reports that NFL teams were aware of this before the story came out, including the Titans, as reported by Nick Suss of the Tennessean. I'm wondering if you think that this story, plus, of course, I've got to mention by law, the short arms, do you think that Reuben Bain tumbles at all in the first round of the draft next week?
You know, I don't think this story will cause him to tumble, Adam, just because the NFL already knows that stuff. I mean, there have been plenty of character flaws that have snuck past scouts over the years that have really bit him after the draft. And I don't think that they would let a guy that will go as high as Reuben Bain will go, which is to say, at worst, the first half of the first round. I don't think they would let him sneak by without going through everything. And what happened in this crash? I mean, the only thing I've been able to ascertain was that he was driving. According to the reports, he apparently rear-ended a car in front of him, and then his vehicle pinballed off of concrete barriers and stuff like that, and a young lady in the car died from her injuries from that crash. But I haven't been able to see anything that suggests that he broke the law. I haven't seen anything about impairment. And if you did, you let me know. But I haven't seen anything like that. It seems like it was just a terrible accident and not the kind of thing that would be seen by most NFL teams as a character flaw that would take them or take him off of their boards. And so, you know, and even if it was that kind of character flaw, what would it have to be? You know, is this a one-time thing, or is this guy a habitual, you know, a habitual crazy person? And so I don't think that'll matter. I think what matters more is those arms. And I think he may drop a little bit because of the nature of his shorter arms and the history of success of pass rushers with arms his length in the league, which has been relatively limited. And I think because of that, whoever does get him, if he does fall a bit, will end up with a great contributor to their team. Because you know Reuben Bain has been hearing for the entire draft process about how he can't play because of his arms. Well, guess what? All these terrific power four tackles that he's had to face over his career that he's just dominated left and right, they didn't ask him how long his arms were. They just knew that he beat them and got to the quarterback over them. And I think he's going to want to prove to everybody that he can play football regardless of the length of his arms. And so, yeah, I think he will drop, not because of the crash, but because of the arms. But I think that whoever gets him will have an incredibly motivated player.
Trevor, there are multiple teams with multiple first-round picks next week. The Jets, I believe, the Browns, the Rams, the Cowboys. Which team, armed with multiple first-round picks, do you think is going to try to use those picks to move up?
You know, I kind of tend to think the Cowboys will, just because the Cowboys do stuff like that. And with that kind of ammunition, I don't know that their owner, Jerry Jones, would be able to resist the temptation. I mean, their highest pick is number 12, so they'd probably want to get up above that if they were looking for one of the premier players in this draft. And keep in mind that there are only about 12 players in the draft with an actual honest-to-goodness first-round grade. And so starting where Dallas is drafting with that 12th pick and then below, you're really looking at guys with high second-round grades that you'll be taking in the first round because that's all there is left. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Jerry Jones said, yeah, you know, if we can't get a guy like Caleb Downs, the safety out of Ohio State, who is mocked to them, by the way, by a lot of people, Downs would be, I think, a real serious playmaker and game wrecker for the Cowboys if he's there and if they take him. But if he's not there, and now they're starting to look at an ordinary, pretty good player, I could see the Cowboys trying to move up a little higher to try to get that game record.
We'll talk with Trevor Maddich, ESPN, NFL, and college analyst. Now, Trevor, why do you think this happens every year? Because it never fails, whether it's right before the draft, the day of the draft, or weeks leading. And I mean, when I mean weeks, I mean 2 weeks out from the draft, somewhere around there, that these stories continue to come out. It's not like the NFL doesn't know about them, whether it was Cam Newton back in the day, whether it was, you know, Laremy Tunsil. These stories just continue to come out when, and it's presented to everybody like this is the first time the league has known about it. When in actuality, if they're drafting a guy, they're going to do their due diligence as far as their background. So why do you think stuff like this continues to sort of come up? And it may hurt a player, but then some players, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning to consider that teams would not, you know, this kind of thing would get by them if it's a real issue, because when you're talking about researching first-round draft choices, NFL teams don't just talk to the college. You know, they talk to everybody at the college. They talk to the equipment managers. They'll talk to some of the teammates kind of farther down the roster who aren't real stars there, just to see what kind of a teammate the guy is and what he's like off the field. They'll talk to his high school coaches. They'll talk to high school teachers. They'll go down into elementary school if they feel like they need to. And they'll get a feel for who this guy is, because the investment is so big that it's hard enough to choose a guy as a player. But if you get a guy who's a great player on tape, but who's a knucklehead or a character risk, or a risk for chemistry in the locker room, you better know that too. And so they really go after it. I mean, take a look at Isaiah Wilson, who was the first-round draft choice offensive lineman out of Georgia, I believe, of the Titans a few years ago. You know, he got to the Titans and immediately just became an absolute knucklehead, flake-out, poor-decision guy off the field, and ended up not busting a grape with the Titans. I'm not sure if he ever hooked on with anybody else. But I had no inclination from anybody I talked to in Georgia that guy was going to make such poor decisions in his personal life off the field that it would affect his ability to be an NFL football player, but he did. And so, you know, these are the kinds of things that make you once bitten, twice shy. And this is why I think about with Reuben Bain, you know, it's well known that he was involved in that crash as a driver. The question is, did he do something criminally wrong, or that exposes a character flaw? And I think you can look at Jeffrey Simmons, the great defensive lineman for the Titans. He had some issues in high school before he got to Mississippi State. And Mississippi State went through the entire process of talking to his elementary school teachers, et cetera, to find out if this was a good guy, even though he had had an off-the-field issue with an action that he took that he got in a lot of trouble for before he got to Mississippi State. And what they found was that the issue wasn't like it was reported, mm-hmm. and that Jeffrey Simmons was a fantastic human being. And Mississippi State was happy to have him, and he became one of their stellar bell cow leaders in every positive way imaginable. So you can't just read an article, I think, if you're a fan, and then make a decision on how the NFL will look at a player.
Now, has your sort of prediction of, or the way you see the draft going, has it changed much from when you start putting together what the draft could look like as far as who will draft who to how you see the draft now? Take away what happened to, you know, the story that came out about Bain, because you believe it's going to be more so his arms that gets him drafted a little bit lower than that other stuff. But has the way you see the draft go, has it changed much?
You know, I think this draft is weird because there's only one straight-up lock first-round quarterback in this draft, and that is Fernando Mendoza, who go to the Raiders at number one unless something super weird happens. But Ty Simpson from Alabama, people have him anywhere from number two to the Jets all the way down into the third round or so. So we don't know where he's going to go. And because of that, it makes the trades really exciting, because the trades aren't going to be nearly as obvious. I think from a standpoint of how this one might shake out, We talked about this a little bit last week, but without a quarterback to trade up for, the Titans at number four, it seems like there'd be less opportunity for a team to break the bank in order to move into that spot and let the Titans trade down a little bit. But Jeremiah Love might be the kind of dynamic game breaker that some teams might move up for. And that's why I think it's interesting that I haven't heard anything from the Titans to either confirm or especially to deny that Jeremiah Love might be somebody that they would want. And certainly, not certainly, but insiders, reporters, people like that often kind of get information about things like that. But right now, the Titans are happy with everybody thinking that they're going to take Jeremiah Love if he's available. And if the Giants at number five, or really the Commanders at number seven, those are the two teams, I think, that might fall in love with Jeremiah Love, think the Titans are going to grab him, they might want to trade up to number four with the Titans and let the Titans trade down just a little bit and still get somebody that they like. And so to me, watching how that might shake out is one of the interesting things in this draft, because it just feels so good and it feels so right that the Titans will take Jeremiah Love according to how so many mock drafts are shaking out. And Derek, how you thought many, many weeks ago, before I heard anybody else talk about it, it just seems to me like it's a setup. And so I'm interested to see how that shakes out.
Well, let's take it a step further, Trevor. Trevor Maddux is with us from ESPN. Let's take that hypothetical where Jeremiah Love is sitting there, the Titans are on the clock at four, and you've got two or three teams right below taking their swings and saying, this is the guy we want. What do you think you could get in addition? Because I think that's what would have Mike Borgonzi having to make a decision, is how much he really wants the player that he wants. Maybe that's Jeremiah Love, maybe it's not. But what can you get in addition for moving down, say, two or three slots? What are we talking?
Well, I don't think we'd be talking about a whole lot because it's not a quarterback, so teams wouldn't pay a premium to move up. But I'm sure you'd get their first-round draft choice and maybe a number two this year, maybe also a number two next year in order to be able to do that. And certainly the Titans have enough holes in their roster that would be very attractive to them. But also keep in mind that the way they built this team in free agency and with trades leading up to the draft gives them a lot of flexibility there. You know, because you have the top tier superstars, right? And on the Titans, that's Jeffrey Simmons, and they hope Cam Ward, but he's not there yet. But that's the only guy. Then you've got the bottom of the roster, which is your core special teamers, et cetera. And it's the middle of the roster that you want to be competitive with so that your stars can put you over the top. So they need stars beyond just the quarterback, hopefully, and then Jeffrey Simmons. But the middle of the roster is what the Titans have done such a good job in this cycle of bolstering, not to be great, but to be competitive, so that then they can bring in that kind of game breaker. And so as you look at what they might be able to get the Titans if they trade up, to your question, Willie, if they trade down, they'll be able to get some things that will continue to help them improve their roster. But the case against trading down, unless they think it's just one or three spots to five or seven, and they think they can get one of the guys they like Sonny Styles, the linebacker out of Ohio State, et cetera, the case against trading down too far is that the middle of the roster, as they're building it now, will make this team competitive and no better than competitive.
How far down do you think, Trevor?
A game breaker.
Yeah, okay, so you keep using the game breaker. How many slots can you move down and still get a game breaker in this draft? Is it seven? Is it eight? Like, how many game breakers are in this draft in your mind?
Okay, I think at number five, the Giants, if they trade with the Titans, then, you know, the Giants would take, you know, if they take Jeremiah Love, then I think Sonny Styles will probably still be there available for the Titans, and he's a defensive game wrecker. If they move two more down, the problem you're going to have, in other words, trade with number seven, the Commanders, you've got the Browns and the Giants, by the way, at number five, both in desperate need of offensive linemen. So that still gives you a pretty good chance that Styles is going to fall to you. But I think beyond number five, you're moving away from game breaker or game wrecker now into very good player. and they need a game breaker with the value of that number four.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mate's Vin Gidendonic. He joins us every Tuesday, and he is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, as always, a pleasure. Next week when we speak to you, it will be draft week. Thank God. We'll talk to you next week.
Huh. Thanks, Adam.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, I want to revisit something Teron Davenport said on our show yesterday that I'm curious for Derek's opinion on it because he wasn't on the show yesterday. So we'll play it for Derek coming up next. 615-737-1025. But first, if you would like a pair of tickets to see the Predators in their regular season finale against the Anaheim Ducks at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday, be caller number 4 at 615-737-1025. Caller number 4 will win a pair of tickets to see the Predators against the Anaheim Ducks on Thursday in the Predators season finale at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Good luck. Caller number 4, 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.